Oi, you. It's time for another episode of Dorothy and the Dealer. Let's tune into the conversation.
Here we go. Well, welcome to Dorothy and the Dealer. Mitchie, how are you going?
Yeah, I feel like we're up against a couple of fucking pros here today.
Oh, I think we are because they do this for a living, pretty much. Welcome, Dean and Anna Murphy. How are you guys going?
Thanks, guys. We're great.
You sound like a radio presenter, even how you said that.
Yeah.
It's like, do you know what the funny thing is? We're breakfast radio announcers, so if this is a visual thing, we look like shit. Like, seriously. Been up since the crack of dawn.
Yeah.
So Anna and Dean, you guys are brother and sister, and we've known you. How long are we? Because we met you first, Anna. How long has it been since we've met?
Oh, well, I was young then.
You were young. You're my age. You're still a little bit old. You're like a month older than me, aren't you? So like,
yeah, so that was about 15 years ago, I think, maybe.
Shoot, something like that. Long? Yeah.
It was.
Well, it'd be 12 at least, but I'm thinking it's closer to 15.
Yeah, yeah, it's been a long time.
It was 8 for me because 2012 was my train wreck year, so I sort of go by that.
Yeah.
When did I meet those fabulous people? Oh, train wreck year. That was it.
The train wreck was before we met, not after, yeah, right?
That was way. That was before. That was before.
Very important to clarify that.
Yeah, absolutely. How did we meet, Anna? Oh, actually, before we get started into having a conversation, you know, we start our podcast with, you know, getting people to share their favourite song or trying to test Mitch to see if he knows the song that you know or you love.
Yeah.
What's your favourite song, Anna? What are you listening to right now? Your favourite
song? Well, I was going to throw you and make it Peanut Butter Jelly by Galantis just to see how you go.
Oh, I don't know.
But that's not a great one. So I'm going to throw Kiki D and Elton John's Don't Go Breaking My Heart.
Don't go breaking my heart.
Oh, look at you two.
I couldn't if I tried. That's it.
So good.
This is why we don't see
Elton John. Mate, on a Friday night, I can do a fucking great Elton John.
Right, yeah.
I can do anything slap great chairs, on a Friday night. Slap people near me. Oh my God.
Love it.
Yeah, I just do pop bananas.
Yeah, great.
Don't go breaking my heart.
Yep. See, now he's gone.
Yeah.
Now he's
Dave,
got
what
it.
About you? What's your favourite song?
My all-time favourite song is Mr. Brightside from The Killers.
Right. Oh. Yes. Mm. Sing it for us, Dane.
Oh, I can't. I'm a terrible singer. Dude, I can mime it.
Yeah. Can you just mime it? And for the blind people, we'll do it in Braille. Anyway.
Oh, dear. All right. So talk to us, Anna, about how you met us. Like, how did that all come about? What happened?
So very good friends of mine and yours, obviously, Caroline and Cameron.
Yeah.
Arthur had done all your courses and I was kind of just in a bit of a, I'm not sure what's going on with life in general, which has probably been my favourite thing to hold on to ever. It's just not knowing what's going on. But, yeah, so Kaz was talking to me and she said, oh, you're really interested in personal development. I know there's great people, there's great courses. And I was like, I'm not sure. And then I went to an information night and I thought, oh, yeah, I'll do that. That's fine. And then I did relationships and you, and I was like, holy fuck.
Yeah.
What the hell?
Yeah.
And can I ask you, have you actually worked out what's going on? Because I haven't worked out what's going on.
No, God, no. No, but now I feel more comfortable with that.
Yeah. It's fine. That's the point, baby.
I feel much more comfortable knowing that, hey, it's fine. I don't have to have all the answers. Yeah. The universe has got my back and all that. So, yeah, I feel like I emerged from that, a very different person in myself.
Mm.
And it's been, you know, you've got to keep working at all this stuff. You have your ups and downs, don't you? But I don't feel like you're ever the same person that you went into that course.
Yeah.
I think the biggest illusion with PD is that you think you're going to do one thing and that you're never going to work on yourself again. If you're not working on yourself, you're not even here. Like, either life is going to throw you challenges or you're going to create your own challenges, but you've got to keep working on yourself, you know.
Well, a friend of mine and I were talking the other day and we were like, fuck, I wish I'd never started.
Because
you never get to the end of this, do you?
Yeah.
Doesn't it end?
It's a very, very normal thing. I mean, there's times I think, how would I be if I just had my head in the sand the whole time? Do you know what I mean? I never asked any of those big questions like, why are we here? You know?
Yeah.
You know, wouldn't it be just, you know, you're here.
So much easier if you're just like popping along and just like, yep, okay, no questions, no nothing. Mm. So, yeah.
But I agree 100% because I've had those feelings too. Mm. But isn't it funny because if you were to think about if I hadn't done that, how many people would be impacted by me not having done that?
Mm.
Do you know what I mean? By me not having, and that's not even because like I'm here on a, on like talking into a microphone, that's just in terms of my own family or that if I hadn't have shifted a little bit about how I think.
Yeah, but who cares about them?
Oh, yeah, okay, fine. That's not talking.
And that's right. Just exactly
let's not
right.
Get serious.
The impact that you can have on other people when you do, you know, head toward, try to understand yourself better, you're going to understand other people and it just blows on, doesn't it?
Yeah, so, 100%.
Yeah. Well, I think that you know, that concept of waking up, other people around you, you know, I always give the analogy of it's like switching the light on. There's a moth in the room. The people around you will either cling to the light and want to know, what have you done? You've done something because you're different. Or they'll just bounce off the light or they just fly out the window. And so one of three things happens, you know. And I think that, you know, that's when you realize it's not all just about you. It is important that when you grow, you give other people permission to do the same, which I think is really vital.
Mm. And then Dean was another story.
I remember Dean coming into the audience. And when he came into the audience, right, I thought, I remember looking at Anna and Anna was saying, now listen, my brother's coming in. I'm like, oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Now he's like, this is hard for me to get him in here. And I'm like, no, I understand. And when he came in, I thought, Jesus, he could actually throw something from that audience. Like, there was times I was looking at him thinking, God, I'm pretty sure if he could come up here and just punch me in the head. I'm pretty sure he would. He was
he
not.
He probably was tempted to
was
a number
not
of times.
Happy. He was like,
oh my
happy.
God. Mm. Yeah, I still remember the day because I just had this train wreck event. Like, you can't, it's, I mean.
Are you okay to share what that was? Or briefly?
Yeah, I was running a massive day party in Melbourne and, you know, I expected X amount of people, and then all of a sudden, out of the blue, this other lot set up an event, which was opposition to me, but they gave away 800 tickets, so I didn't stand a chance. But I had these international DJs, international singers, the whole thing. The international singer was so bad, and she was so stoned, and almost fell off the stage. And I had to get on after her and apologize to the crowd and say how shit it was.
Stop the music.
Right? I had to stop the music because it was so bad. And so everyone thought I'd gone postal. And I was like, oh my God. Oh, sorry, I got a dog in the background there. He's gone postal. But everyone thought I'd lost it. And because I'd lost so much money, I just lost so much money. And it was, I didn't know what was going on because 2012 was the first real time we really started to feel the global financial crisis.
Right.
So people weren't going out as much. Mm. And I just kept doing the same thing over and over again and expecting it to change. And I was losing money hand over fist. So Anna basically, she knew what was going on and decided to get me along to which is a Money Mind
Mastermind of Money.
That's the one. Sorry, I've only done it 5 times. Yeah. You'd think I'd know the name of it by now, wouldn't you?
Right, you're a great advocate. Anyway. Mate. You're a great advocate.
So I go to this thing and she drags me along and she wouldn't tell me what it was all about. And I'm like, I sort of remember standing there and thinking, I can't do this. I'm not up to it. I can't go in. The last thing I need is a rah-rah session because I'm going to kill them all, right? And I thought, oh, what am I going to do? What am I going to do? And then I said to her, look, you know what, Murph, I just think I need to go. Mm. And just as I said that, round the corner, this little leprechaun came and you looked at me, Mitch, and you just went, blah, 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 Anna. Oh, by the way, yeah, you look like you need to be here. And I'm like, what? What do you mean?
Really?
What? And I was sort of like sitting there going, I said, what? So then I go into this function and I'm sitting there and thinking, don't drink the Kool-Aid. Don't drink the Kool-Aid. You can't go down this road. You were in Amway for a long time. You can't do this again. You can't. Anyway, there was something about, I didn't really pay much attention to much of it. I was trying to tune out. I was trying to, you know, but it was one thing you guys said to the crowd, which I went, wow, okay, that makes sense. It's when your life isn't progressing and isn't moving ahead and isn't whatever, there's a good chance that you don't have a why, right? And I was like, what the fuck is that? What do you mean I don't have a why? Oh, and when you kept talking about it, I was like, yeah, that makes sense because I've been doing everything, but I knew how to do it, I knew what to do, but I didn't have the why. I lost the why to why I was actually doing this stuff, and I was just spending money hand over fist. So that was the first introduction, and that was probably the most valuable thing. And then, you know, the next, I remember there was the next course was up, which was relationships. Relationships and you, I think it's the first one. Yeah. So, and I'm like, and Anna's going, maybe you should go to the relationships and you. I'm like, maybe you just need to shut your face because I've done one course, I'm fine now. And then I'm like, as it got closer, I'm like, oh, go and do it. I'll do it. You know, everyone else, Kaz and these friends of ours and Anna, and everyone's got something out of this thing. I need to go and do it. And that thing blew my head off. And actually, the first night, which is the Friday night, I didn't think I was going to go back the next day. Mm. Right? I literally went home and drank some bourbons and went, no, I'm not going back to that. That doesn't suit me. And then I went. Anna just said one or two things. She said, you know what? What are you going to lose?
Yeah.
And I was like, oh. So I went back and it was.
Then I turned my phone off and didn't answer any of his calls.
And without saying too much, because the course is, I think people just need to, you know, there's so many things that came out of that weekend and so many things that I loved about it and hated about it at the same time. Mm. But by the time you get to the end without giving too much away, I had honestly, my whole life had dramatically changed from that weekend.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. It is a magic weekend. It's very, we just love the chance to work with people at that level, you know. We love,
especially we love people who yeah. are a little bit hesitant to yeah. come.
Hesitant?
Yes.
You have to drag them in by the ear.
Oh, my God.
But it's like, you know, people who are most, I love the skeptics, because people who are super skeptical are the ones who really have a mind-blowing experience.
Because they're not expecting it.
Because it's so left of center. It's like, holy moly, I never even thought of it like that. And that's because you weren't fucking thinking. You know, you're asleep. You're just going through the motions, and that doesn't get you to where you want to get to, you know? So do you want to just tell us a little bit about what you guys do where you are? Because you work together, your brother and sister, and you work together. So just tell us a little bit about what you do and why you do it.
Anna, do you want to mention? Okay, so we've been doing a radio show for the better. I was a program director at a little community station in Melbourne called Joy. And one day there was a girl who was on air and she just cracked the shits and walked out. And I was like, oh, interesting. I need to fill the spot.
Right.
So I rang Anna up and I said, hey, listen, do you want to do a radio show once a week with me? She's never been in radio, never done any stand-up at that stage. Mm-hmm. It was like, oh, okay, yeah, we'll give it a go. And so we got on and people just started to really love it. And then we ended up doing two breakfasts. And then the story goes, we did it for about 9 years just for fun. Seriously, I'd been in radio since I was 19. So for me, it was just, I love it. It's been in my blood forever. And for Anna, it was a chance to really express herself in a way that she hadn't been able to do before. Mm-hmm. So we did that. And then we didn't really think it was going to, you know, we threw out some audition tapes to the major commercial networks. But, you know, it's one of those things too that you learn through this kind of teaching that you've got to be very determined and set in what you are wanting out of it. That's the thing. And I think for a long time we were like, I'd be good, but a bit nervous. And I had commercial radio fears from the past when I was young and all that kind of stuff going on. So we just kept plowing along with this. And then this year we got offered to do full time at Joy, which is great. And it's everything we love, but now it's time we realize through what we've done and what we've learned is that there's bigger things out there that we can actually do because now this is a stepping stone. So, it's been good. It's been a really good ride.
Have you thought about a podcast?
We're trying to work out what the angle, because, I mean, everyone's got a podcast, don't they?
So our angle that we've discussed and talked about is that we're really good with celebrities. We're really good at interviewing celebrities.
Right.
But what we want to do is we want to actually tap into celebrities on a deeper level because, you know, everyone talks about this is their latest release, this is their blah, 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 whatever. We want to work on stuff that actually people go, oh, wow, they went through all that as well?
Yeah.
They went through the hard times? They went through the
perspective? Like, what did you have to overcome to get to where you are? Like, it's all glamour and whatever. It's not behind the scenes. There are other podcasts that do similar things to that. So I just really want to make sure that we've got an angle that, stands out.
And uniquely you.
Yeah. But I think the thing is that the unique part about what we do is we're always going to throw humor into it. We're always going to be that, you know, we can tap into people because we've learned enough skills along the way, thanks to you guys, to be able to tap into people's emotions on a deeper level and be able to throw the light and shade in there and just and give them a bit of fun at the same time. So
that's what resonated with – can you guys hear me all right, by the way?
Yeah.
That's what resonated for me with you guys. And, I mean, if, like I've done other courses and stuff, day seminars or whatever, but it's the humour that comes out of the, like it's really irreverent and you don't have to be like – it doesn't have to feel like a church service just to, you know, to move someone forward. You can
have fun
with it. And that's been my whole – that's who I am. I like to have fun with stuff. So.
You do stand-up comedy now, right?
Yeah.
That happened afterwards, didn't it?
Yeah, that definitely happened afterwards. Like I was really a frustrated actor and wanted to do all these things. And I don't know whether I was very good at acting. I used to try the auditions for colleges and get like a callback and then no further. Right. So that was just me in the way. But and then I never thought about radio. That was kind of Dean's thing. And then I always thought that I'd only be better if I could memorize. I wouldn't be good off the cuff.
Yeah.
And then radio taught me that I'm very good off the cuff. In fact, I'm better off the cuff than I am at reading stuff now. Yeah. So, and then Peter, our older brother, came back from overseas and he really wanted to try stand-up and it had been in my mind forever. And I was like, And then he tried it first and I was so nervous and I was just petrified. So for about I think he did 6 months before me and I was like, I'm going to get up there. It's the most terrifying thing I've ever done. But it's the best fun when it's working as well. And I've found my groove about that as well. So, I mean, I don't want to give up. I'm not 20. I think if you start at 20 and you're out every night, you know, and you could do 50 gigs all over the place, you know, it's a different story. So for me it's really fun and I can utilise it. In the radio show, I use a lot of stuff and there's voiceover work coming and different things. So, yeah, but that's Dan. I run two rooms before COVID. I had three rooms on the go. And
wow.
I do like performing for this thing called Bogan Bingo, which I'm not sure there is in Perth.
I don't know if we've heard you talking about it.
We've had Bogan Bingo over here.
Oh, yeah. So I do it like, you know, it's a character spanner and like I've had like, you know, 400 people in a room and, you know, I can get up and hold a room now, you know. This is that's happened in the last couple
of years. it's not really stretching her acting skills a long way. She's the biggest bogan I've ever met. So
I've never met as much of a good looking bogan as she's a good looking bogan, but fuck, she's a bogan. But I was gonna say, have you had any tough moments, like any hecklers, anything like that? Have you handled that?
Yeah, like I've had tough gigs with the bingo. I've had like two really bad stand-up. My brother, the other brother, Peter, was there for both of them.
Right.
And he liked to come up to me afterwards. He's like, because he always goes, oh, you never bomb. Right. And because I've got a lot of experience in front of people talking and stuff like that. So generally if I know what I'm supposed to do, I can hold it to the end. But I've had like two where it's just gone really bad. And I'm like... oh my God. And just got off going, what the fuck would I do that for? Like, those ones are the ones you learn. Because when it goes good, you can't remember what happens. That's you right. just know it was good.
Yeah.
But when it's bad, every single minute that you're on stage, you feel a thousand. So painful. Dean runs away. He goes and hides in the toilet.
I can't watch it. I go and hide in the toilet. I can't do it. Bad comedy. Can't do.
I was going to say then, Dean, In terms of what you do and in terms of, you know, we spoke a couple of years ago in STP. We were talking a little bit about...
we're in the relationship section of STP.
We're in the relationship section. And we've actually been speaking with Dr. John Gray, doing a couple of interviews with him. And he said, so we've decided that we want to ask some questions. He said to us next time you come on, Mitch, just ask questions around some of the stuff that...
Like be specific with some of the specific questions. Problems.
And we were talking about something which blew my mind in STP. We were talking about, the promiscuity of gay men. And you brought up a really great point, which was because there was no marriage at the time, there was no bond, there was no connection, there was no reason for people. So men were, gay men were predominantly very promiscuous.
Do you remember that conversation?
Yeah, I do actually. Yeah,
obviously it's legal now. Gay marriage is legal. How has that changed things? Sorry.
Maybe you need to explain that because I think it didn't come across as well. Do you want to explain what?
Okay, so when was gay marriage legalized? It was
3 years ago.
17.
17? Yeah, 3 years ago. So, yeah, before that, it was hard because, you know, our relationships on that deeper level weren't recognized. You know, you couldn't get married. And so for a lot of guys out there, it was very much a thing, well, what does this evolve into, you know? And so, you know, there's this kind of culture of there was not a lot of role models getting married because you couldn't get married, but there wasn't a lot of role models in the gay scene. So you'd find that people, their natural, when they've been bombarded with a lot of stuff, whether it's open relationships, people cheating on their boyfriends, blah, 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 whatever it is, it sort of gets in the psyche of a community. Does that make sense? You start thinking that's the norm.
Yeah.
Because there are no role models of such. But since gay marriage has been legalized, it's changed that to a degree because now it's it's hard because, you know, I understand, and I did back then understand, having lived a straight life for many, many years, I understand that there was a big fear about it, that there was like, you know, why do guys need to get married, you know? Mm. I mean, it's not going to lead to, for a lot of people, it's not going to lead to kids and blah, 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 blah.
Right.
But it was never about marriage. It was about
the evolution.
Being equal. It was about being equal.
Yeah.
Right.
You know?
Right, right, right.
It was just about being equal because for so long everyone was like, no gay marriage. You can't get married. Yeah. What you're saying to so many people is you're not equal.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
You know, and that's all the LGBTIQ community wanted. They just want to be treated equal. Mm-hmm. So massive things have changed since then. Lots and lots of really role models for younger gay guys. You know, it's now that can evolve into something else. You can have, you know, and even in terms of adopting or fostering kids and so forth, that's all changing as well. So you can create your family, you know.
Wow. Has that been good for you? Do you think as an individual person yourself?
Yeah, because I honestly believe, see, when I came out, I didn't see the difference between being me as a straight person and me coming out as gay. I couldn't work it out why there was such a big deal. Even though it took me so long to get there, when I got there, I was like, I haven't changed. I'm still the same person.
Right. The black hot pants were different.
Yeah, thanks. that was a dramatic change. You know what? I keep saying to people when we tell this story, I say to people about what we learned with you guys, which is suppression, expression. The more you suppress stuff, and I'd suppress stuff for 27 years, and I burst that fucking cupboard down. I just went crazy.
Yeah.
You know, because all this stuff had to come out. Yeah. And so I say to people,
you became turbo gay, super gay,
turbo gay, like it was full on. Like, and the thing with it is, you know, for those, I tell people all the time, don't be afraid of that. It will plateau out, but it is because of the suppression thing, and you people do go crazy, and just everything's a new journey, but. Mm. It plateaus out. You find your spot. You find your groove.
And did you find out when you came out that everybody around you was like, yeah? Did people know? Like,
no, because see, we're talking 20-odd years ago. Right. So basically then the friendship group split in two and half of them I never saw again.
Really?
Yeah, absolutely. Fuck. My father, and it's a long in-depth story, but being a very liberal, man, he was the conversation I had with him when I came out was because I feel sorry for any of the younger members of the community who come out to their parents and get the reaction that I got because I had established my friends, my base, my life, and so his opinion didn't really matter to me all that much.
Right.
I wanted him to accept it, but at the time he wasn't ready to accept it.
How old were you?
I was 27.
Really? Okay.
So, you know, and time heals all, you know. I mean, now he's happy to have I take all the orphan gays down to their place for Christmas and he greets them with a beer and, you know, and he's, you know, and he wears his little pink Christmas hat and all that kind of stuff, you know. I mean, it's change. It is time. But back then, I feel like now with the parents coming through with their children and whatever, I just don't feel like there's a lot of them who give a shit.
Yeah.
You know, I just feel like times are changing, so which is great, really good.
So you know the whole suppression expression thing. Do you feel like you were suppressing? Like, I mean, you said that you classified it yourself that you were straight or that you'd lived straight or whatever. What happened? Like, how did you?
So what happens with, you know, denial is a very strong emotion.
Mm.
Like, it is incredibly strong. So for the most of my life, I'd grown up in this very, you know, I had a pretty rough brother, you know, and very straight parents, no gay people in my world. You know, there was maybe one or two people out at school, but, you know, I had taught myself at an early age that that's not right. Mm. You know, that is not you just don't do that. And as a young kid, I would remind myself, if I ever had a thought about anything which was slightly in that arena,
yeah,
I would scratch my arm severely to make sure that reminded me that I shouldn't go down that road.
Wow.
Right? So that denial is incredibly strong. It suppresses everything because you're so, and you do everything to try and cover up for it. You know, whether it's the clothes you wear, the attitude you have. I was a big guzzling, Holden Premier driving, AC/DC listening, womanizing, Bogan from Hell. I did that's everything. I would absolutely.
The contrast with the hot pants was so extraordinary.
But that's all a cover up. It's all being in denial. And you know, I tell people all the time now that, you know, watch the ones with the strongest voices against whatever, because they're 100%. The ones that got the most to hide.
Yes, 100%. You know? That's why you find all the people that are saying anything about, you know, anything, they're bagging anybody. It's like they're trying to hide that part of themselves.
Totally, 100%.
What they're displaying in public is to demonstrate or to hide what's actually going on in private. Yeah.
It's funny because had I not done your courses, I wouldn't have understood what I did.
Mm.
Like, I wouldn't understand that. I'm such a big believer in the suppression expression thing, and you know, I view it now daily in things that I do, you know, emotions of people and all this kind of stuff. I look at it and I go, it's so true what you, absolutely. So when you go through with things like I went through with your course, it's so good to understand what you did, because you can have a lot of regret with things as well. Regret that, you know, I should have come out earlier. I should have done this, whatever. And what I realized again through your teachings is it's not about having regrets. It's about finding the blessing in all the stuff that, you know, has gone before you.
Yeah.
And what did you learn out of it? How did you get stronger? How did it make you? Mm. So,
history is perfect, and it leaves great clues for us to understand who we are when we do have that flip, that change, that shift, you know. It lets you know.
What did you feel about all of that, Anna? Did you know, do you think? Or did
No, I didn't. I was I'd been away overseas for a few years as well, and he'd been with a girlfriend for, I don't know, most of 8 years. And so I didn't. But then when I came back, Mum started saying, oh, you know, they're having problems. And I thought, well, that's really odd, because they were really good together. And I was like, well, that's really odd. And then at one stage we went out and he was really drunk, but he was being really flirtatious with these guys. And I was like, hello, there's more to this story.
Right, my God.
So I asked him when we were at this nightclub, and he just looked at me like horrified and just turned on his heel, and that was it. And I was like, ooh, oops, because, you know, I'm quite blunt at times.
It's gone away like this.
I was staying at Mum and Dad's, and I got a phone call from him the next day, and he was like, oh, I need to come and speak to you. And I was like, oh, here we go. So I was just sunbaking, and he came down and he was like talking about everything else except, and I said, right, do you want to tell me what you came to talk to me about? And he goes, oh, did you ask me a question last night? I went, yes. And he goes, I don't know. And I said, well, don't you think it's time to find out, honey?
Yeah.
And he was like, oh. And I was like, just want you to be happy. Like, I didn't care, but I was like, yeah, we've got a road to go if that's, you know, because knowing Mum and Dad and everything, I was like, that's fine. I'm here. It's fine. So I had no idea until that moment. And then I was like, okay, cool. What do we do now? How do we move forward? It was never an issue for me. And to hear stories, you know, of the scratching and stuff like that, there's parts of me that go, oh, that's horrible.
It's terrible that people have to feel that day.
Yeah. But the other thing too, is I had a girlfriend of 8 years, and we were like, we were inseparable. Like, and that was the confusing thing too, because I was in denial. I was pushing all these emotions to the side. We got along like a house on fire. had we broken up earlier, like way back in the piece, maybe I would have come out then. But right. it was so good. I kept thinking it doesn't probably get better than this, but there was you're not living your authentic self.
Yeah.
There's a part of you, and the deciding factor is everyone was expecting us to get married. And the deciding factor with me is I can do this, I can marry her, but I'm only going to be mentally with her 80%.
Mm.
And I started crying because I was like, wow, she just, that's not, it's not about me. She deserves someone who's with her 100% mentally, not 80%.
That's right.
That's bullshit.
Yeah.
So it was kind of like, yeah, that was the turning point for me to go, nah, I have to get out of this because I thank God she's an angel and she's moved, you know, she moved on and she's got a family, the beautiful kids and whatever. But there was a lot of guilt with that as well that, oh, fuck, have I wasted her time and, you know, and so yet again, through what you guys teach is about guilt. It's a wasted emotion. And we all do things and it's finding the blessing. And she came out even better with her life and her kids and all that kind of stuff. And we had a great time. There was never a day that went by that we didn't have a good time.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Isn't it funny that sometimes people's turning points are about how everybody else is going to feel? I mean, that it's not like if that's what makes you turn, well, then that's great, like, you know, at the end of the day. But a lot of the time it's like, you know, people say I got off drugs because of my kids, or I did this because, you know, I knew it was going to affect them. And if that's what it takes, it's what it takes. But it's funny how we don't necessarily but, do know, that for
I
ourselves.
I think ultimately we do actually do it for ourselves. But it sounds in some ways more noble to people to say that it's for someone else. But in actual fact, that's just an outcome of low self-worth.
Yeah.
You know, when you realize, no, I fucking did it for me because I knew that for me there was somebody waiting on me and for her there was somebody waiting on her.
Totally.
And together we just weren't the right people and that's okay.
Actually,
she said to me just after it, she said, oh, I just worry about him. That must be awful that he's gone through all that. So he's spent all this time worrying about the other person. The other person's just like, I mean, obviously she said to me, if it had been another girl, different story, I would have been furious. But because he's, you know, it's come out. She goes, well, we can't be with me then.
It's a really weird one. Like I said to you, the whole denial thing is, and I just think it's a shame that people can't, you know, are going to spend. Anything I could say to anyone is, don't waste time.
Yeah.
You know, don't waste time because every day you do, and you're living that life which isn't really yours. You're not living your authentic self, and it's. It's really difficult. You've got to be, you know, you've just got to learn to, I don't know. I think people just need to learn to deal with things a lot quicker. I didn't. And hopefully I can help other people who are going through similar stuff. So,
you know, you said that you you realised that you didn't have your why, or you felt like you had your what and your how and stuff. You had your drama happening in 2012. Did you find your why?
Yeah.
What's your why?
My why is I lived 16 years. I was doing running big events and parties and whatever. It's an interesting world, that whole party world, isn't it, Mitch?
It is.
Mitch knows what I can
remember. And
what we don't remember, yeah.
And what I realized is I was doing I was creating memories for the moment. For people, like I was creating this 8 hours of escapism for people, and I'd see, you know, thousands of people having a great time, but I wasn't having a good time. It's weird. It was like I was I was chasing the dragon of trying to get the next one,
yeah.
And trying to live in that world where it's parties and nightclub people, and you know, there's drugs and alcohol and whatever. It's a whirlwind tour, and you know, it's none of it's real.
Yep.
That's the thing. You're creating these environments of escapism.
Yeah.
You know, nothing wrong with that, except I'd been in it for 16 years.
Mm.
So, you know, and I felt like I couldn't escape it. So I don't know. It's kind of weird. COVID has been really good because it kind of made me stop for the first time in a long, long time and reassess everything and go, actually, you know what? I feel present. For the first time in 16 years. So, you know, I'm not living 6 months in advance or 12 months in advance or whatever. But it also, I'd been working with in amongst all this, I'd been working with footy players and, you know, business people and whatever, doing this really good visualization, goal setting, sure. Mindset work and all that, which I started years ago, but I never thought, I just thought it was, you know, when I'm this old dude sitting in a chair, I'll get into that, you know. I never thought I'd actually do anything with it because I'd done some courses and whatever. But what I realized is there's a shitload of people who need just that positive reinforcement and that belief in themselves and the confidence and so forth. So that for me was my why, has become my why, mm-hmm. is like I want to invest a lot more time. And through the radio show, you know, well, we put a smile on people's faces every day.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But it's through, you know, radio is a great way to absolutely, especially for the gay community, you know, we're finding that we get a lot of people gravitate towards our show because they feel safe. You know, they feel like they're a part of something, even though it's a radio show. They feel like they're a part of something. And we can, through our radio show, we break down walls of the broader community by educating them on issues like whether it's, we had one, it was Bisexuality Week last week. Well, who the fucking knows about, you know, we had to talk to people about it and expose people to it and whatever. So I find through all the stuff I'm doing now is my why, mm-hmm. because it's giving me purpose. Whereas beforehand, you could have the biggest event under the sun, you know, and thousands of people get so many responses, but I was empty inside because it yeah. wasn't changing people's lives. In fact, for a lot of people, it was fucking them up, mm-hmm. right? You know, because they were trapped in it.
Yeah.
And I felt for a long time I was perpetuating that because I was like, oh, I'm running this thing and I'll see you at the next one. And I know this person needs to go into therapy or I know this person needs to go into detox big time. And I'm like, yeah, fuck it, I'll see you at the next one.
Yeah.
It was just, I felt like I wasn't helping them. I was some way responsible for them going down roads of drugs and alcohol and whatever. So, yeah.
And what about you? I don't know that you – did you have a question about your why? But I'd still like to know what it is.
But and just while you're going there, Anna, just – I mean, why did you go to comedy? Why did you want to put yourself out there like that? Because it's fucking hard. Like, man, I sit back and I think, like, I know what it's like to stand and try to command an audience. It's you know –
And when it flops, like, because Mitch does – like not comedy, obviously, but he tries to entertain people.
Yeah.
And every now and then a certain audience is it just – we're like, this is – There's
certain audiences you walk into and it doesn't matter. I think – Man, I need to check the pulse of these fuckers. Are they awake?
Did they not get my
hello?
I know. Anyway, someone check that woman's pulse.
Yeah. Why comedy? It's just sort of evolved. Like I've looked for ages for what my why is and stuff. And I've always got the good job. Like, you know, I was a flight attendant for years. I was cabin supervisor. Great. You know, bored the hell out of me. And I got a job in pharmaceuticals. It's a good paying job. Bores me. Right, unless I can entertain people, bring a smile to people's faces, then I don't really feel like I'm that fulfilled. And then I did a diploma of life coaching. I was like, oh, because I really enjoy helping people as well. Mm-hmm. But then I was like, I don't really think one-on-one coaching is me. I just don't know. And people, you know, when it's too heavy, I'm like a bit uncomfortable about mm-hmm. that. Like, Dean does a lot of coaching. He's okay with that. Whereas I'm a bit like, oh. I don't know, but if I can bring a smile to someone's face and see them light up and just, you know, change their day because I've made them happy or whatever, that for me is me being in my groove. That's what my why is about. So now with the radio show and getting to spend, you know, we hear from people in outback Australia going, thank you so much. We've had people during COVID just going, thank you so much for getting up and doing what you do every day. You guys are what is making me smile and getting through these days. And, you know, that just makes me happy, you know, like if I could do that on a bigger scale, which is what I'm trying to sort of, you know, bring into existence in my world, you know, with all the hosting and the shows and performing and I just love it. Like I'll sit in my room and do, like, they've been recently doing Bogan Bingo online. So I'll just sit there for an hour and a half and just make people laugh. Like, and it's great. You see happy faces. And so, you know, for a long time I was confused. Should I be married? Should I have had kids? And da-da-da. And then I did the stepmom thing for a couple of years with a guy who pretty much requested that I give up all of those things to focus on him and the kids. And everything I learned from you guys about giving away your values, I gave away all my values because I thought I'm 41, this is the last opportunity for me. I'm never going to get married. And he's got kids. And so that's taken care of. And I just did not look at any of the red flags because I wanted so much to have a why that was about that. Mm-hmm. And it just, I've never felt more small in my life. Mm-hmm. Like, and all I kept hearing a lot of times was why, you know, don't ever make yourself small so that someone else can feel big. Mm-hmm. And incidentally, he was short. and I really did. And I lost myself in that. And then coming out of it, I've had to really rely on what I learned from you guys of just really tapping in. What is your why? What do you want? What does fill your cup? And you know, and now I'm so happy doing it. I mean, there's stuff I want to change. I'm still doing the repping job to, you know, pay the bills and stuff like that, but I can balance that out because I can bring joy to so many people. And you know, we're doing a really good thing, and I just love making people smile. So you know, heaps happier.
But she's also, and you know, like the funny thing with Anna is she didn't do comedy, would not get on the stage, petrified. She gets together with this guy who ripped away her values, but he was actually the reason why she got on the stage.
Well, this is this is the point I was actually going to make, because all great comedy stems from tragedy of some level.
It was a really it was a very dismantling time, but he at one point said, well, I don't think you, maybe it's for you because you shouldn't do it because it's just, you know, it's, look how much nervous it's making you. And I just, there's something in me just was like, fuck you. I am going to fucking do this if it kills me. So then I just was like, I have to have something for me. And then slowly but sure, by the time I broke up with him and we did our first comedy festival show. So
then you got a lot of material from that too.
Well, I did a bit based on 1950s housewives. And, you know, what he wanted me to be, because he said, I really, that's what I want you to have dinner on the table, no questions,
really?
Whatever.
Like, wow.
What the fuck? That's not me.
So, you.
You know, so in the middle of a breakup, I did 4 weeks of a comedy festival show. So the world was just like,
wow.
Oh my God, bizarre. So, so I learned heaps. But yeah,
the other thing I was going to.
Comedy as well. Like, I got a coaching gig helping new people do stand up last year. So there's come into play as well. Cool. That all dried up because of COVID, obviously. But that's combining. I can help and the laugh. That's all.
So can I just ask?
Dean was just going to say
something. Sorry, Dean, you're going to say something different.
Oh, no, I was just going to say that, you know, because I've been in radio since I was 19 and I've seen every female announcer that you could ever want to see. Anna is by far, well, she's probably one, not even female, you know, probably one of the best comedy radio announcers in the country at the moment.
Wow.
And so the opportunities will open up.
Yeah.
It's just a matter of time. But the sheer amount that she creates on air with, you know, a lot of those other shows are lots of producers, lots of people, you know, whatever, but the funniness and the off the cuff stuff that comes out of it is second to none. And she's, like I said, she's probably, in my opinion, from experience, she's probably one of the best in the country.
Wow. That's so cool. I love hearing that. But you know, even just with you, Anna, and every time I think of you, every time I see you posting stuff or whatever, I'm like, I love the fact I think about you and I think I have fun when I'm with Anna. Like, I laugh. I remember we were out at a lunch one time and you were telling all these dating stories and I was literally just weeing my pants about how, just like how you, just in that you would have had like weeks worth of material, and just the fact that you, just the way you make people laugh, I love that. And I know that whenever we, like Anna and Dean are around, it's like, oh, we're going to have a giggle now, you know, we're going to have a good time, you know.
But that's how we feel about you guys too. Oh, like, there's something about you type too that is absolutely magical because you just can't wait to catch up with you. Like, it's just that thing.
That's nice. That's lovely. I was looking at some of Anna's posts through the COVID thing. She's like, for fuck's sake, you fucking dickheads, just fucking stay at home, man.
We can feel your bogan coming through.
As I was reading the post, I was thinking, I could hear the accent in the background. You fucking dickheads, stay at home, man.
Oh, no, she has a temper and I'm very impatient at times, which is why I think I'm not the one-on-one coach.
Probably not. Stick to the group.
I'm thinking, and Dean, you probably should ring Anna and take the phone off her. Just take
the I learned years ago, just let her run her course.
And so just let me ask a question. Let's say I'm always interested in, you know, kids' childhoods and stuff like that, and your childhood. Let's say I was to step into Anna's room when she was 12 years old.
Oh
what would I see on the walls of Anna's room? And then while we're talking to Anna, Dean, what would I have seen on the walls of your room if I'd have stepped into your room when you were 2 years old?
Absolutely. At 12, I'm pretty sure 12, would have been a picture of Christopher Atkins that I kissed on the mouth every night before I went to sleep. And it was so bad that the mouth, like, wore away.
Turned to puppy emotion.
But that TV Week, do you remember the TV Week in the paper was yes. really terrible?
Yeah, terrible, yeah.
It wasn't glossy. It was like newspaper paper. And so, like, I kissed it so much. The mouth disappeared. And that's all I can remember, really. Oh, probably lots of soft toys around.
Oh, that's hilarious. And, Dean, what would I have seen?
12-year-old, probably a lot of Kiss posters. I was into Kiss at the time.
Right.
But I was always Paul Stanley. So I was the lead singer. Yeah, a lot of Kiss posters. And probably, according to our good Christian mother, a lot of tissues under the bed.
Oh, God. The
I just went there, didn't I?
He did.
Sorry, you asked.
No, that was good. I'm pretty sure I asked about the wall. I didn't go under the bed. I can imagine what was also on the wall then if it was happening under the bed. Dean, you were a professional diver for a while. Is that right?
Yeah, so I'm still diving. Yeah, so I started diving when I was 12.
Right.
And then I continued right through till I was 19, and then I had 8 years or 9 years out of it, and then I fell in love with it again. So I actually came out, and about 6 months later, I found the sport again, and it just changed my life.
Wow.
I did not know that.
Yeah.
There you go.
So have you any questions you want to ask Guz?
I want to ask you guys, like, how, because I know you're so hands-on with your courses. Your courses are amazing. Mm. And how did COVID affect you guys as far as, like, not being able to do those just wonderful, seeing the faces and you know, those groups and crowds of people and the change that you make.
Yeah.
How did that affect you guys? And did you enjoy, you know, was it the time that you could regroup, or was it something you went, oh, we're really, were you fucked off by it, or what's?
It was a lot of it and all of the above and none of the above as well. We came back, we were in India, and a few people had said, don't go to India. And we were like, we're going to India, like, this is happening. Nothing major had happened at the time. And when we were in India, they started telling us about toilet paper shortages and all these other bits and pieces and, you know,
oh, wow.
stuff was happening back home. And we weren't really seeing that over there in India or in Singapore. It just wasn't evident. Singapore was quieter, but it wasn't evident. And then we got back here and it was like, what have we stepped into? Like, no toilet paper on the shelves. It was like another world. And I think I got back, you got back maybe 48 hours before me. I got back about 12 hours before they did the whole lockdown thing. So the timing was like perfect. And we had a seminar due the next week and we were like, if we go to Melbourne, the likelihood is they're going to close the borders while we're in Melbourne. We didn't know, but we just had a feeling. And then they called it. So we had called the Melbourne seminar and we said, look, we're not going to be able to do this. And then they called it and said, borders closing. And so then it was just like, we were here. So the benefit of it has been really, it's been really good for us in a lot of ways, because we terribly missed going out to Melbourne and being able to fly and being able to see everyone. We've got a lot of people who are booked in to do relationships anew, for example, and we haven't been able to get out to them. And everyone has been amazing, just understanding that, we can't get out there. And obviously just hanging out to, we've got people now that have been waiting a year or over a year to be able to do it and they can't. And then we've basically just gone in and gone, right, what are we going to use this time for? How things that we've always wanted to do, and because we're traveling a lot, we haven't been able to do. We just stuck our heads down, bums up, and started working away and creating different things. So we've created a new business package that we haven't really taken out to the market yet fully. We've got a number of people in it, but it's just been a few people in house. As in just people that we hand selected and they've come on board. And we've changed our coaching. We're in the middle of creating another seminar. Mm-hmm. Can't really run the seminars that we've run, like relationships and you. It's usually, not really, doesn't really translate to online, but we've got different types of things that we're working on as well. So it's been really, it's been an interesting year, hasn't it? It kind of went a bit bananas,
but we had spent a lot of time on stage and we couldn't get into the creative room because we were just packed out all the time. It allowed us to come back and get off stage and actually knuckle down and build out stuff that we had always dreamt about building out anyway, and make sure that we MJBify the business world for people. And then we, as Milty said, we created lots of coaching packages. But the other thing that was really amazing for me personally was within our organization, within MJB, we have an amazing group of
the staff that just blew us away. Wow. Honestly,
everybody stepped up. Everybody did. Everybody. We just really saw how, you know, I know when I'm working with someone, my objective is to get them there. But it really showed me how that translated through everybody, but that everybody's objective is to get a person there, you know, because
sometimes you can be a bit blind to that when we're out there in the field and we're not realizing how much everybody is just behind us and have everyone's got our backs with that, you know, and has that same intention.
Yeah. So that was really magical for us. But I think that there's this great word that everybody throws around, pivot. But we're in the process of pivoting. We didn't want to do an immediate knee-jerk reaction thing. That wasn't amazing. We had to move quickly, and we did. But we have the things that are coming to the market are gonna be very, very good, mind blowing stuff that we for 10 years we wanted to be able to do. We just couldn't bloody do it. But so now we've done that.
Do you know what? Do you know what COVID's been good for though? Like really, is just getting like I bumped into. One of our clients probably about 6 weeks ago at the shopping centre, and she had a grandmother in Adelaide who was passing away, ended up dying that night. And I just went, oh, you know, I was like giving her sympathy, saying, you know, my heart goes out to you that you can't. She goes, no, it's actually okay because I see that it's given me this and this and this and this. And our clients coming back to us and just saying how they're like they wouldn't have been able to get through this period if it hadn't have been for the money work they'd done with us or with the mindset work they'd done with us, because they really some of them are schooling us, you know, because I'm here trying to console her going, oh, you know, you poor love, and she's like, no, it's actually okay because I know about all of this stuff and I've been able to do the work on it. Do you know what I mean? To me, that has been really really humbling.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? Because I've said to you guys a number of times that I feel like this is your courses and whatever, the teachings need to be taught to kids on a mass scale, because there's something really fucked up with the system that we have now. And I don't know whether that's something that you guys have looked into, but, you know, I'm finding now things that I talk about with people now, 10 years ago, I'd never talk about this shit.
Yeah. Right.
You know, there's just such a monumental shift in the way I think about things through what I learned through you guys.
Right.
And, you know, even this period of time of COVID, I mean, you know, everyone was freaking out left, right and centre, especially in Melbourne and, you know, with the restrictions and whatever. And Anna and I would daily literally say to each other, we're really grateful for the fact that we can do a radio show. We didn't take too much of that on board. And I feel like, I don't know, I just feel like, you know, hopefully in some way, shape or form that you guys can actually do what you do on a mass scale with young, you know, the kids. You know, the youth, you know.
Yeah.
And it just sort of helped us with the, you know, we've had pretty much 4 months of lockdown. There's not 6 months of no content because no one across the world is doing any performing or there's
no talk about COVID.
There's no movies, there's no nothing. So we got the gig, the dream gig at the time, where it's just been the hardest to try and put stuff together. And the thing that has kept us going is like just thinking about that person, the why, and who are we trying to entertain, and just being grateful for the experience, because we've been able to hone our craft, I guess, during this period of time when, you know, let's face it, lots of people are getting up a bit later, so they might be listening to our podcast like the snippet. But we've had 6 months where without as much pressure as probably usually, we've been able to get really good at what we're doing. So now that things are opening up, this will be the next step. So I look at it as a bit of a gift of time that way, that we went from 100%. one day a week is different to 5 days a week.
Yeah, 100%.
You know, and sustaining the energy and stuff like that. So it definitely staying grateful. Yeah. You have to.
100%. Listen, guys, we love and appreciate you. Thank you so much for joining
Thank
us.
Thank you. It's I want so to say, good.
it was good lovely just out. Chatting with you. It's always lovely hanging out with you. I just meant to say to you before, one of our film guys, I told him like before that we know you, like Dean, and he's like, the guy that runs the Rock City parties. I've been to them. They're so like, he's as gay as Christmas himself. And he's like, yes, I love it.
Yeah.
And he was so excited.
I think that's one of the blessings of doing what I've done for so long. I can go anywhere in the world and I'll bump into someone that's been to one of the events.
Your parties.
You
know,
so
that's cool.
So, but guys, thank you so much.
Are you going to be still doing that? You don't know.
I don't know. Like, you know, it's hard because for where we stand at the moment, clubs will open up. But I mean, in Brisbane, they're opening up and they're allowed 100 people, and you've got to sit down and no dancing. Yeah. Kind of isn't what I do.
Not really your thing,
you know. Yeah, and so. Yeah. So will it be the same? I don't know. And I feel like the longer the break I have from it, the less likely it is I'll go back to it. Wow. But the occasional thing, I think running them is always sort of in my blood, so running something will be on the cards.
Maybe
we just don't know.
Format.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, guys, thank you so much. It was really good having a chat with you.
Thanks
for your time.
You look so well here.
Pardon?
You look so well.
Oh, is it? It's the lighting.
That's what freedom does for you.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, good.
Yeah. We look fucking awful, actually. It's just lighting and makeup. It's amazing.
Oh,
well,
thanks,
hopefully
guys.
We catch up soon.
Yeah,
see
hopefully.
Big love.
See
you guys.
If you found this information inspiring, make sure you subscribe and tune in to the next Dorothy and the Dealer podcast.